Welcome to the Got Your Six podcast. This podcast brings together current service members and veteran high performers to share their methods, strategies, and ideas delivered in an informative and, most importantly, actionable way that'll help you lead yourself and those around you from the battlefield to the boardroom. Coming to you every episode, I'm your host, Tony Nash, and into the breach.
Nothing mentioned on this podcast is an endorsement or opinion of the Department of Defense.
I got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. Got your six, we got your back. I got your six.
Sixers, what an unbelievable treat we have today. The king of Leg Tuck Nation. That's right, Alex Morrow, creator, co-host, Mops and Moes. You've seen him all over Instagram. And what they're doing is really relooking at fitness culture among the force and how we have to kind of look at it from a lot of different perspectives and really understand what tactical human performance is all about. Alex, thank you so much for coming on the Got Your Six podcast.
Tony, that intro is undeserved compared to some of your recent guests. I've seen who you've had on the last few weeks, man.
Hey, thank you, bro. And vice versa, like you guys continue to just keep going. I love, just like I married, right? I'm always trying to like outkick my coverage. So let's really start at where did you kind of realize that there's more to be had with inside of specifically like the Army when it comes to fitness?
Yeah. And it kind of gets to the root of like what Got Your Six is all about. But I had a pretty traditional military intelligence officer career for the first six-ish years of my time in uniform. Normal like platoon leader, S2 sort of stuff. And I enjoyed that. I don't like regretting the choices I made. I had fantastic assignments and all that stuff. But as I was like looking ahead, I was starting to like make career decisions about my life. I found myself at Fort Drum. I thought I was going up there to deploy. The deployment got canceled. Little frustration going on. So that was about the same time that the new ACFT was coming out, and there was an opportunity for some officers to go work at the Army's Physical Fitness School. I took them up on that. Pretty radical career shift. I don't think MI Branch was too happy with me on that one, but started work, like kind of rolling out the new test, quickly transitioned to teaching master fitness trainer. And it didn't take long in that job to realize that like, man, this is what it feels like to do work that you're really passionate about every day. Not that I hadn't liked my job before that, it had been fantastic, but like sometimes something just kind of clicks. And I knew that was kind of the way ahead from that point forward.
And when you talk about that clicking, like it's not something you can really describe because it's so personal. But when you do feel it, like you're just like, this is where I need to be. Everything has kind of led to this moment somehow, right? Whether from your time at West Point, you know, and everything else to kind of get you to that. And then as it's continued to go off and, you know, rise and thrive, because people need to have that discourse, right? Where it's, everybody doesn't need to agree with what you're saying on Mops and Moes, but we need to have the conversations of, hey, a tactical athlete is a much different than a seasonal athlete, right? Your waves are much shallower. Where initially did you really start to get, was it when, once you got to kind of do the career path after not deploying, or was it even before that where you really got into fitness?
It had been a gradual process, I think, in part thanks to West Point Department of Physical Education. They get credit for a little bit of it. I didn't arrive at West Point particularly fit. My parents had kind of like made me do sports growing up, but I hadn't really taken to any in particular. I ended up kind of running cross country throughout high school, a little bit of track, but like not at a level where I was like even thinking about college athletics or anything like that. Very much just kind of there to like stay physically active or whatever. So I showed up at West Point with the physical domain by far being my weakest, right? Kind of struggled early on in some DPE. I did okay. I just wasn't particularly athletic or anything. And like gradually was just the way that development model works, kind of forced to address my weaknesses in a way that I wouldn't have had to without the Army. So I don't think it really fell into place until probably halfway through, like a couple years into the whole cadet experience, I started to kind of figure out fitness, I guess. And so it's kind of funny, if you talk to people who knew me in the first 2 years, they think of me as like the academic tutor guy. Like if you need help with like chemistry or math or whatever, go see him. And if you talk to people who knew me in the latter half, they think of me as like the fitness guy, like company physical development officer, like climbing, all this stuff. So there was a little bit of like a shift in identity that happened along with it. And it gradually continued from there. I ended up, the infantry battalion I did for my very first assignment after graduation was a fantastic environment. We did a lot of things that were kind of stupid in terms of the way we did fitness, but in a way that a lot of character was built.
Those were crazy times back in like 2013, 2014, 2015.
Oh yeah. Lots of learning, some of it the hard way, but like really valuable stuff, some really cool experiences, learning to push yourself, all that kind of stuff. And it just kind of kept building from there.
How do you continue to go back? And you mentioned this, the working on your weaknesses in the sense of a place where it's not demoralizing, but it's inspiring.
Yeah. I think it's a Jake the Dog quote that sucking at something is the first step to being kind of good at something. And I think there's value in always seeking out things you suck a little bit at, just for like the developmental experience you get from forcing yourself into that uncomfortable space. And I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it. I really, really do not like doing things I'm not good at in public. Nobody likes doing things they're not good at in public. But there is value in overcoming the desire to like hide that from other people and just embrace the fact that like we're all getting better at these things together.
What recently kind of comes to mind where you've kind of put yourself out there in a public domain, really stepped into the arena, if you will?
Ironic that you asked that. Doing a podcast would have to be it, man. I joke about it sometimes. I was just joking with a friend about it like 20 minutes ago. In the last, I guess it'd be like 4 months to cover both of them, I've been asked to like speak to two different exercise science graduate programs about like what's going on with this Army stuff, what the Mops and Mo's thing is, what the whole message is. I do not have a degree in exercise science. I have a degree in international relations, a bachelor's degree, and I have no advanced degrees of any kind. And most of the coaches I talk to that are like working with military audiences, doing the whole tactical strength and conditioning thing, a huge number of those folks have master's degrees in this field. After their bachelor's, they did internship time. They did all this stuff, like a ton of time in the trenches. I came to this pretty late. So there's an immense amount of imposter syndrome when you're just like putting your ideas out there to be criticized publicly. And I'm sure you've seen it, but like once you start putting your opinions on the internet, people have no problem letting you know what an idiot you are.
Absolutely zero. Do you constantly just keep a, like almost like a working list of content ideas, or is it inspired based on conversations, or is it a combination of a bunch of different things?
It's a little bit of both of that. Occasionally it comes from stuff I'm reading, but by far the most common way I think of content stuff is because it comes up in conversation or people ask me about it, because that's how I know I'm not the only one interested in it. Because sometimes I am the only one interested in stuff I put together. Like I spent, it's like 6 months ago now, maybe longer, but I went down this huge rabbit hole. There's a fantastic two-part research paper that was like sponsored by the International Olympic Committee looking at what training volume's relationship with injury risk is. Just like absolutely incredible deep dive. They put together like a couple dozen of the biggest experts in the world on like training and injury risk issues. And I thought it was the coolest thing ever. And I spent a couple weeks putting together like 4 or 5 posts on it, all this like in-depth stuff. I learned a ton in the process and I started like putting that stuff out there and just nobody cared, man. Nobody was remotely, it was too nerdy. There were graphs involved. It just like didn't resonate with anyone. And it was a good reminder that like you have to pause and think about like the messages that actually resonate with people. Like that was important stuff. I'm glad I learned it. I reference it all the time when I talk about how to mitigate injury risk, but like there's an audience that you have to think about too. You have to put yourself in other people's shoes. And sometimes the stuff you're nerding out about is not exactly what everybody needs to hear that day.
But the other flip side, like you were saying, is you've been able to continue to go back to that knowledge that you've gained from it time and time and time again, and then use that to start other conversations that might not have occurred because you had an entry point. It's like when you hear a fun fact, the next person you see, like, hey, did you know this thing? And you talked to us about this a little bit. How do you continue to combat that imposter syndrome?
I don't know if you necessarily combat it. It's always there. It doesn't exactly go away. I've talked to enough people that are big enough experts and things like that to know that imposter syndrome is not something that just like ends. It stays with you. I think for me, it's just kind of keeping it in perspective and realizing it's okay to be wrong. And like, I've put a bunch of time into this, not that many, much resources, but like a ton of my personal time and energy into like building what Mops and Mo's is now. And I think about through the process, how would I feel if the whole thing fell apart tomorrow? And I'd be completely fine with it, because the most valuable thing I've gotten out of the entire process is the learning that happens. And more learning happens when I am wrong than when I am right. So I mean, I'm sure you got it too. Sometimes people don't disagree in the most respectful way. It's not like a productive disagreement. But for the most part, when I get something wrong, people send me like relatively respectful, like sometimes making fun of me, whatever, but they'll let me know I'm kind of being stupid. And that's when the most learning happens on my end. Like sometimes people are embarrassed to be wrong, and yeah, it's a little bit embarrassing, but like I have learned so much in this process that if like all of it went away, just like the things I know now and the perspective I have now would be so valuable. So you just kind of check the imposter syndrome at the door, accept that it is okay to be wrong in public, even if it's stressful, and you get so much more out of it.
Like you said, you own it. That ownership of like, hey, these are my ideas at this point, but also being able to take on other ideas or other viewpoints once you start having that dialogue is an absolute game changer. And it's not something we talk a lot about in normal conversations. And you do that a lot through your content on Mops and Mo's, whether you know it or not, because it does help to stimulate where it needs to go, right? Because it's not just one person. It affects so many other people.
The question I get the most often, it happens like multiple times every single week, is like, I'm looking at your stuff, I'm learning it, but how do I convince my leadership about all this stuff? That is the constant question. And I like, if I had the answer to that question, I'd be off doing bigger and better things, you know? Like if I could just like tell you how to convince people of something, tell you how to change people's mind in a simple, straightforward way. And so the only way I know is to just keep helping people have these conversations. And so that's exactly what the goal is. Like whether I'm right on it or wrong on it, it's nice to be right sometimes. It's helpful to be wrong sometimes because it spurs some conversation. I just want to help make sure that like, if I've noticed that this is a conversation that seems productive between me and a couple people, then it will probably be productive between me and a whole lot of people. And I try and frame up those conversations in a productive way.
Have you found anything that you've kind of talked about with people as they implement it with their leadership, meeting them where they're at, trying to understand hesitancy or what the barriers to entry are? Talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah. So, I mean, like you know some of this, but I'm sure there are people listening who don't. A lot of the message I'm trying to push is about kind of rethinking the way we approach mostly physical training, health and fitness in general, but like very much a primary focus on like exercise, PT. And that's an extremely culturally ingrained thing for the Army. Like, why do we do it? Because that's the way we've always done it. And so a huge amount of this is how do you present it in a way they can try? And like so much comes down to just kind of using yourself as proof and getting that first foothold in the conversation with a leader who like you, it might take a while to find the one they're willing to try a new way with. And that's when you have to capitalize. Like you have to spend all that time maybe getting told no over and over and over again. And you find that one little spot where you can sneak in and say, okay, you're willing to change on this one. Let me prove that this way will do it so much better, get you the results you're looking for. And that's where you start to make a little bit of progress. But even then, it's going to be about continuing to have those conversations. You're not going to win the whole thing overnight.
Right, and that's the other piece too, is it's enduring, right? It's constantly iterating the process because version one and version 50 and version 100 look radically different at the end of the day.
And I got to ask you a question at this point, because the way I know it's working is when I find out these conversations are being had in places where I am not there, right? Where I'll get like a random message. I got a fun one. It was like a major lieutenant colonel out in Korea and a lieutenant bumped into each other and they noticed that they both had Leg Tech Nation stickers on their water bottle and they started talking about Mops and Mo's kind of stuff. And like that kind of stuff gets me so excited, which is why I thought it was brilliant when I saw a note from you just a couple of days ago saying the Mops and Mo's name was invoked at work. So I kind of want to hear, hopefully they weren't saying terrible things. Hopefully it was in a relatively good way, but I kind of want to hear what the conversation was.
So my boss is a massive proponent of what you do and the H2F program, so much so that we've developed the battalion level training program that's a 3-day long. We bring in the dietitian. You know, this is all based out of the 3-shop. We have a really just stellar first lieutenant, senior first lieutenant, and E5 who are just absolutely crushing the program. But yeah, you constantly come, and I should text you more because you're constantly coming up because we're able to take these different approaches or at least that tactical pause initially to be like, are we doing the right thing? You know, right? Mops and Mo's. And then how should we continue to look at it as we go forward? And then how do we implement it at the lowest level? Because it's great if somebody at the top thinks it's great, but going from 1 down to 700 is a completely different ballgame.
Oh yeah. And I'll take the chance to riff on it since we're with a different audience that I'm normally talking to today to explain, because we've like said the phrase mops and mows a few times, but we haven't defined our terms here, right? Like this audience is largely Army probably. And if you are, you might be nerdy enough to have looked at like, I think like the core reference it comes from is Joint Pub 3.0. It existed before the military embraced it. It's kind of a systems engineering thing to a certain degree, but it's measures of performance and measures of effectiveness. It is not mopping the floor and mowing the lawn, but measures of performance is, are you doing things right? Like the lines of effort you've undertaken or the projects you're doing or the whatever the tasks you're doing are you accomplishing them correctly? And that we're pretty good at measuring. Like we set standards, whatever your framework is, task condition standards, whatever it is. We know how to measure, are we doing things right? The Mo's piece is taking a step back, a little bit of a broader lens, and asking, are the things we are doing, no matter how right or wrong we're doing them, are they getting us closer to our actual goal? Because sometimes you can work really hard on something and it's not producing the outcomes you were hoping for. And I apply it to fitness most of the time, but it's a framework that works really well for a whole lot of things to like pause, reflect for a minute, and question whether the way you're going about it is getting you moving in the direction you wanted to be moving in the first place. And that's something we struggle to measure sometimes. Sometimes it's really hard to quantify, or sometimes you are not going to have that data until long after the fact, whatever it is, but it's worth pausing to at least know how you would want to measure it before you undertake a new mission or whatever it is, to really consider, yeah, we have to do things right. I'm not saying mops aren't important, but we also have to bring the Mo's into the conversation and make sure we're moving in the right direction in the first place.
How have you implemented that recently outside of fitness?
Yeah. Like I said, it applies to almost anything you do. One of the funniest things was I've had people reach out and say, we're working on this big project and like leadership asked us for mops and Mo's on the project. Can you help explain to me what it is? How do I do this? What do I do? One of my favorite ones, this is a few months ago, so it's not super recent, but I had a friend, a Bullock classmate actually, who's doing great things out in the Army as we speak. And he at the time was doing TAC stuff at West Point actually. And he was working with the Buckner commander, right? The cadet field training commander. And they were putting together like, how do we measure whether a staff is working was their question. Like, how do we establish mops and mows for like a three shop or a two shop, like whatever. How does somebody who's running a staff measure if the staff is functional? And I don't have like a ready-made answer for that, but I can definitely facilitate a conversation about what might be measures of performance. Like how long does it take to respond to each thing that comes into the staff? Like are the battle rhythm events happening as you expect them to? All that kind of basic, like are we doing daily tasks correctly? A lot harder to start figuring out Mo's in an environment like that. What is the purpose of the staff? Why are we here? And like establishing those goals and then trying to measure things like that are pretty fuzzy is tough. But I think it was really cool to have a conversation with somebody who's learning how to lead in that environment about attempting to actually measure and seriously reckon with that kind of self-evaluation.
There's just so many different applications across the board. Going back to the human performance side of it, as you've continued to create this space and understanding like where kind of the root issue is, as you've kind of gained more knowledge, where have you been ultimately like super wrong and you're so grateful because you've learned better ways or that you're more informed?
This is like, I'm trying to find words to like articulate a fairly complicated thing here. A lot of things are much more complicated than I thought they were. And a lot of things are much less complicated than I thought they were. I'm sure you've heard of the Dunning-Kruger effect. For those who don't, you can Google it and look at the graph, but it's like the process of learning. And you first come to the peak of Mount Stupid. And that's where you have learned enough to be dangerous. You think you understand things now. And then you enter the valley of despair where you've like gone past that enough to realize like, oh, your first understanding was not actually the whole thing. There's way more to learn. And then once you get through the valley of despair, you start to climb the slope of enlightenment. And I probably launched Mops and Mo's at the peak of Mount Stupid, where I was like, man, I figured some of this stuff out. And I need to tell you guys all this knowledge I got. And there, I look back and I've archived some of it. Most of it's still there, but some of my early posts, I go back and look at it. I'm like, man, I was not right. Like I shared it and I got it from a textbook. So it came from something that seemed right. And like people liked it and cheered me on and stuff. But some of those simple early on explanations are like kind of useful for the right audience, but not all that once you start to like get the bigger picture.
What you also talked about too initially is like, the more you understand something, the more complex it is, the more simple you have to be able to apply it, right? Like Professor Feynman, known for like all his work in like the Manhattan Project and the O-rings after the Apollo missions, was always searching for people to try to like help understand topics better by saying what he knew and then kind of distilling that down. Do you have a similar process outside of just posting and creating content? Do you have like a group that you kind of go to and you're like, hey, this is what I'm trying to get across?
Absolutely. An easy way to like start figuring out who my group is look at some of the early guests that I brought onto the podcast, because those are the kind of people I bounce ideas off of. And even some of the people we're just bringing on now are the kind of people who've like been in the background helping out a lot throughout the whole process. You got to have people who tell you you're stupid. Like going back to that same Olympic committee study, I originally tried to put it all in one post. And then I like sent it to a buddy and said, hey man, like, what do you think of this? Can you provide me feedback? And he's like, dude, slow down. Too much. Not a good idea. And he didn't end up successfully convincing me not to like do it at all, but he did at least convince me to like break it down into smaller bite-sized pieces. And having people who are willing to like tell you you're being dumb is really, really important. It started out as a solo thing. Mops and Mos was just me trying to put out stuff. A lot of pieces have come together because of bringing on Drew to help out with the podcast.
Who's an absolute stud.
Yeah, it's been fantastic to work with Drew. Actually, right behind me is the Soft American article by JFK. And it is part of how I knew I would get along with Drew, because I walked into his office and he had it framed in his office. And I'll give credit to him. I would not have a framed one on my wall if I hadn't seen his and gotten inspired by like sharing that message, right? But I bought a microphone and like downloaded the software to edit my podcast like more than a year before I even tried to record something. It just sat there. It like sat at my desk and I was like, I know I want to do this, but I have no freaking idea how. I'd kind of figured out a little bit of like the how to get the social media stuff working and all that, but I just couldn't like, I scripted out some where I was just going to like do a whole episode myself and just like talk about stuff. And I had like a list of possible guests, but I just couldn't figure out how to get started. And having somebody on the team to push you a little bit and like somebody whose areas of expertise are not the same as yours and overlap in ways that add to it. Yeah, it's been huge.
What did he say that ultimately like just said, all right, we've taken enough time to kind of let this thing collect dust. Let's do it.
I was thinking about this the other day, like where did it actually, like what was the actual genesis moment? And I honestly cannot put my finger on it. But what I can say that I think would be valuable for a lot of people, and people have asked me about like launching similar things, and I've given this as the advice, you just got to start. You got to stop thinking about it so much. You're going to overthink. You're going to overcomplicate. We probably recorded at least a half dozen episodes that have never published. We thought what we were doing was building a stock of like episodes so that we could like get through weeks if we didn't have a new recording or something like that. What it turned out we were doing was just practicing. Because by the time we got ready to launch, we realized we'd gotten so much better over the course of fumbling through a few of them that like stuff we recorded even like 2 weeks prior to that was like not even usable compared to where we'd gotten just by doing it a little bit for a few weeks.
Yeah, you don't have to be perfect out the gate. You just have to try. And that kind of leads into our final question is, how are you better today than yesterday, Alex?
I guess the simplest one is saying same stuff I've said earlier in the episode, but I now have a bigger circle of people who are willing to tell me when I'm completely wrong. And I couldn't ask, like the best part of this, I've said it before, was the learning experience, being able to learn straight from people, being able to like build a community that like holds each other accountable and things like that. So yeah, the thing that has added the most to my life or like where I'm at in terms of like knowledge or confidence or what have you has got to be like the comfort level getting out being wrong in public for sure. And I know you said that's the last question, but I got to take a second to just hype Got Your Six for you. I am honored. Like just looking at your recent guests, man, like I was listening to General Petraeus the other day. You had Sonny, whose stuff is hilarious. Him and like Josh Green, or for those who don't know him by his actual name, One Punch Dad. Absolutely hilarious every single time. Total legends. Mike Irwin, who will, like, spoiler alert, be coming on Mops and Moes pretty soon. We're excited about that. You had Cole Christensen, who just became an NFL champion this past weekend. Just some like absolute studs on Got Your Six, man. So I'm honored to be among them.
I really appreciate that. Honored to now include you as a friend of the show. Alex, where can people go to learn more about Mops and Moes?
Easiest way, actually, one of the things I'm fairly proud of is if you Google the phrase Mops and Moes, you'll start to find my stuff, which is pretty sweet. But most active on Instagram at mops_n_Moes. We just launched mopsandmoes.com, which is just mopsnmoes.com. It's got all the podcast episodes with all the show notes. It's got a blog where I get to rant a little bit, all sorts of good stuff. And you can find the podcast on any major podcast channel.
And don't forget to go out and continue as gear drops to support. Get your sticker, get your slap. They are the best.
Yeah, we got sweet stickers, man.
Alex, thank you so much for sharing your strategies, your methods, your tactics. And most importantly, my man, thanks for having our six.
Thanks, Tony.
Sixers, Bruce Lee said, "I fear not the man who has practiced 10,000 kicks once, but I fear the man who has practiced one kick 10,000 times." I hear that and I think of the team over at Bridgebuilt. I own a Phoenix squat rack, and it is the absolute ultimate piece of gym equipment that I have at the house. Heavy-duty construction, versatile design, and the ability to fold up for limited space. Not to the wall, not to the floor. You just fold it up on wheels, move it wherever it needs to go. Head over to bridgebuilt.com and upgrade your gym today to the Phoenix Squat Rack. Hey Sixers, did you know the Got Your Six podcast is now streaming every Wednesday at 6 p.m. Eastern and Saturdays at 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern on Wreaths Across America Radio, available on the iHeartRadio app, the Audacity app, and the TuneIn app. Just search the word Wreath. If you got something out of this, be a battle buddy. Share with a friend, pass it along. If you're listening on Apple or Spotify, make sure you leave us a review and give us as many stars as you think we warrant, because we love what we do here at the Got Your Six podcast. We're always adapting and evolving this podcast because of you, the Sixers. And if you're listening on Spotify, hit that follow button. You'll never miss an episode when we drop new ones every Monday.
I don't know what you've been told, Sixers, but the lawyers would like us to remind you that the views, opinions, and comments expressed on the Got Your Six podcast are solely those of the hosts or guests, to include current and previous Department of Defense employees, and should in no way be considered the opinions of or endorsements on behalf of the Department of Defense or any of its components, divisions, contractors, or other current and previous staff members.